Hey, everybody. Welcome to Take Your Shoes Off. I'm Rick Glassman. Oh, goody. What a guest we have today. Well, his new album is called Harmony. He actually released a new version of it called Harmony Deluxe. There's a vinyl. Lots of songs. You're going to love it. My goodness. Handsome, talented. What can't he do? Can't dance from what I hear, but he's here with us on my balcony. Give it up for the wonderful Mr. Josh Groban.
Scoot-doo, blabbity-blue, scoop-dee, oh yeah!
I have sparkling water. I realize I don't have any water.
Oh, so sparkling's fine. Or tap, whatever.
Ew. Josh
Groban. Oh, man. Amazing. Thank you. This is so good, isn't it? I kicked the fan up one notch. Is it? Can you hear it too much on the mic, or is it okay?
Josh Groban, you know? We'll have the biggest fans all over.
How many cameras you got going?
Three.
Oh, because we're going to do an intro.
You're going to be here, theme music, cut to this.
Cool.
And it's going to cut to me probably apologizing for 5 or so minutes. This stuff makes me so hot. I'm so sorry. Thank you for your patience.
Oh, no problem.
And then probably overstepping and being too familiar.
Okay.
Our levels here. Let me hear you talk.
Hey, 1, 2, 3. Test 1, 2, 3.
Good. You know, I always wonder why 1, 2, 3. Or one, two, for music, sometimes it's 1, 2, 3. Or sometimes it's 5,
yeah.
6, 7, 8.
Yeah. Why did we choose 1, 2, 3? Test 1, 2, 3. I don't know. It's the first three numbers.
No,
we
but
can
I'm
switch
saying
it up.
That makes sense. But for musicians, sometimes we go 5, 6, 7, 8.
Exactly.
Is that because it's 8 measures and it restarts at 1?
I think 5, 6, 7, 8 is more for dancers, and I couldn't tell you why because I can't dance. But if I'm in a band rehearsal, my music director will always kind of count us into the measure by kind of going 3, 4, and then we know to come in on the 1 because we're thinking about 4 yes. beats to a measure. But the 5, 6, 7, 8 is very like Bob Fosse, like step ball change. I feel like.
Okay.
I don't know.
Question number 1.
Got that done.
Josh, thanks for coming over, man.
Rick, thank you for having me.
I'm going to get some comments already saying, Rick, just go on with it. But this is my weakness, and
okay,
I have to acknowledge this, and I'm sorry about it's a little hot today.
Oh, it's a scorcher, but that's okay. Because, you know, we've had a chilly week here in Los Angeles, which is something that being I was born in Los Angeles. Were you born in Los Angeles?
No way.
Cleveland. So, oh, you're Cleveland.
So you've had, my arms tired.
So you've had cold.
Yeah.
Real cold. I grew up with, you know, 75 degrees every day. So having a chilly week was really fun this week. We almost had a little bit of rain. And now today, it's like I my bones needed heat.
Okay.
I'm happy to have it.
You're being gracious.
No, it's fine. And you got me this. You were so nice to give me. You got me a nice coffee and a fan here. I'm feeling properly spoiled here today. Thank you.
Well, I'm gonna put this out there, maybe twice, but at least once.
Okay.
You're vaccinated.
Oh yeah.
I got tested. I'm tested every day, including today.
Of course, because of your work. Yeah.
Should we bring this inside?
I'm okay. I feel actually really nice out here. I really do.
Would you tell me, would you say, Rick, it's getting a little hot, or at you know what I mean?
I would absolutely tell you. If it comes to that, I will come inside. But at the moment, like, I've been so conservative about this thing all year. Like, I have been, because my parents are in their 70s, and I'm in a job where, like, I'm singing.
What do you do?
So I dabble in kind of abstract painting, but I pay for that through my singing.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a singer. I you know, when you if you're a brass instrumentalist in a studio, you have to take even more space apart because of all of the breath. And for singers, it's the same thing. So because I'm often singing on mic and I'm often working with duet partners and things like that, and because they don't exactly know for sure yet whether you can transfer it after you've gotten vaccinated, I've done well so far this year. I'm very, very lucky that I've stayed healthy, that my friends and my family have stayed healthy. So you know what, it's a nice sunny day. Why mess with fate?
You heard it here. It's a nice sunny day.
That's it.
Why mess with fate? We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
That's it.
Funny stuff, Josh Groban. But I'll tell you what you can mess with. Our new sponsors, Bespoke Post, and their new collection, Box of Awesome.
Hey, Rick, what's Box of Awesome?
It's exactly what you think it is, Josh Groban. From style and grooming goods to barware, cooking tools, Box of Awesome has collections for every part of your life. And as a listener, get 20% off your first monthly box by visiting boxofawesome.com and using promo code TISO at checkout. Take their quiz at boxofawesome.com and use promo code TISO for 20% off your first box. A big shout out to our sponsors, Helix Mattress. Helix has a lot of different mattresses to choose from, and they will help fit the proper mattress by taking their 2-minute sleep quiz. Helix is offering up to $200 off mattress orders and 2 free pillows by visiting helixsleep.com/Tyso. That's up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows by visiting helixsleep.com/Tyso.
And we're back.
You bring up doing duets.
Yes.
And your new album, Harmony.
Ooh.
Which you could get at your love.
Not expecting a plug. Thank you very much.
We'll put the description in the link in the description.
Do we snap to a link?
Well, the link already came up.
Oh, we don't need to snap for that.
No, okay. We don't snap to links. We snap to videos or snap to put on mustaches.
Understood.
Which, if you are inside,
sure.
I have a big mustache budget.
Do you?
Yeah. there's what's the Joni Mitchell song you did with Sarah Bareilles?
Both Sides Now.
Yeah.
Love that song.
Here's the thing that you got. I told you already, I am a legitimate fan.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, you're part of the workout playlist. I've listened to you forever.
You've got competition.
I did that joke earlier.
Did you?
I remember I said 2 big fans and it didn't make it in.
Yes.
And now I'm going to look like I couldn't give it to you.
I feel like that's one of many similarities between the two of us.
What, fan bits?
Just yeah. We both like a pun.
I love a pun. I actually have a character who's a guy that doesn't quite know how puns work, but he's seen it happen before. And let's just say he enjoys doing them.
Yeah, I see where he was trying to go, and I appreciate it, even though it didn't make sense.
Did it not make sense?
It went over my head.
Okay.
But that's okay. That's okay.
All right. Well, I guess the grapes are in the fridge. No, that's an analogy. Oh, fuck. I can't bomb at the beginning of this. We'll be right back with a word from a mattress.
All right.
A big shout out to our sponsors, Marshall Carpet One. And we're back.
We're back. Man.
Sarah Bareilles.
Yes.
I saw her in Waitress in London.
Me too. I saw her in Waitress in New York. Incredible.
How does it work when you're fans of people before you work with them? Did you know her before you saw it? Probably, right?
Well, I was a fan of Sarah's music early on. We kind of came up around the same time in the business.
Oh, she's from here too, right? She went to UCLA.
I think she was born here. She did go to UCLA. I just knew her music. And we both were fans of Ben Folds at the time. And so we actually met for the first time at a Ben Folds concert because Ben had asked both of us to do something with him on stage that night. And so we met backstage. And
you had never met... None of you had met before that?
I had met Ben before. We did a funny kind of Tim and Eric music video together, and then Sarah and I met that night before that. And then we kind of didn't cross paths for a while, and at some point, I don't remember how we connected again, but we became pals through arts educations. We connected through our various philanthropy work for Arts Ed, and we just kept bouncing into each other, and we'd never recorded a serious song together. We did funny things. We hosted the Tonys together. We always have a good time, but I was terrified to sing Both Sides Now because it's just such a brilliant song, and she felt the same way about it, but it felt like a good time lyrically to sing it.
Was this song presented to you and you're like, I'm scared, or?
That happens a lot for me. I don't know if it happens for a lot of singers, but as somebody who kind of did the songwriting bit a little bit later in my career, I was brought into this business first and foremost as a song interpreter, as just a vocalist.
What is a song interpreter?
Just somebody who sings songs that are previously written and singing covers or originals that weren't written by me. So I always approach things strictly from the perspective of is this something I can add to, or is this something that's been done 500 times and it does not need my version of this song? So whenever I get a song that's such a classic like that and has meant so much to me in my life, my first instinct is, why me? Why do I have to do this? And I think Sarah, being self-deprecating and humble as she is brilliant, kind of felt the same way about certain songs that way. And it's a song about perspective. And this is this has been a year where we both felt like, young and old, everybody has been through seeing those different sides. And those classic songs live on forever because they span generations. They mean a lot, even 40, 50 years later.
when you say add something to it, is there a song that you can't add something to? Is it based on ability or your connection to the song?
That's a great question, because sometimes it is intangible. Sometimes it is something where I might be able to, like, on paper, really sing my ass off on it, but for whatever reason, I'm just not getting that the truth in it. It can sound show-offy, but there isn't, like, the stuff behind it, as kind of, you know, esoteric as that sounds. And that's where the arrangers step in. So much praise goes to the arrangers and the orchestrators who kind of give you the template to say, oh, that's a twist I wasn't expecting, or that's a spot I wasn't thinking of horns there, whatever it is. And you say, okay, I can actually sink my teeth into this as a singer, and I can make it my own. That's a cool feeling.
That's what my grandfather did.
Really?
He was an arranger and producer. He did all of Ray Charles's music.
Oh, my gosh.
Not all. Whenever he came, I think, to Capitol in like 59 or something. Yeah. I don't know the history. My mom would. But he arranged orchestras without any instruments. He would just, like, this is very cool.
He could just hear it.
Yeah.
The best arrangers I've found, because now you can make all kinds of noise anytime you want. You can plug in a MIDI keyboard. You can. I have fun going on Logic and GarageBand and stuff and just cutting.
Shout out to Logic and GarageBand, by the way.
We'll do the whole thing, yeah. And the people that can just hear it in their head and put the pen to paper, and then they actually physically hear it for the first time when they're in with 60 pieces, that is some badassery right there.
Can I ask you some specific questions?
Sure.
And
I'll try to answer as best I can. There's certain things about theory and orchestration that are still just go.
Yeah, this isn't going to be about math.
Okay, good.
This is experience.
Cool.
First question into that is, you said, you know, sometimes you, on paper, I get what you mean, but you could sing your ass off, but you're not feeling it. But that could be a song that you did feel. Like, could you listen? Like, is there a song you listen to and, like, hell yeah, and then you want to sing that, and you're an amazing singer, but for whatever reason, the song works because it made you feel something.
Sure.
But you doing it doesn't?
All the time, yeah.
And then the arrangement fixes that, or sometimes?
Sometimes it does, and I can be proven right or wrong about a song because I'm also an overthinker about stuff, and a lot of times I need the push.
What? Somebody saying you could do it?
Somebody saying, yeah, you can do it. I mean, I've been very lucky that I've had people in my life, producers and executives and whatnot, who've kind of been a confidence booster for me when I didn't have confidence in myself about stuff. And so I'll always approach things as my own worst critic first, and then I'll have to kind of prove myself wrong about that. I need to talk to my shrink about it, but
I'm going
to
ask you more about that.
It's the maze. It's the maze I have to go through to the point where I say, okay, you've got something strong you can do here. But then there are songs where I've wanted to do it forever. I love the song. It's my karaoke jam, whatever it is. And I try to win that battle of, like, can we put this in the session? And I try it, and I'm proven wrong about my want to do a song. That happens too sometimes. And that's why you sing a lot. The early processes of an album, you're just singing everything, just you and your pianist. You're just going through a ton of things and going, ooh, that feels right, or that's not right.
Do you usually agree?
Usually, yeah, I would say about 90% of the time. There's always going to be battles. It's a marriage. You know, I get to have my face on the front of an album, but to make an album, there's so much collaboration. There's so many brilliant minds in the room and a lot of strong opinions. And when it comes to music, it's, you know, it's there are parts of it that are objective and parts of it that are very subjective as far as taste. And so we get into disagreements, but I think the best albums come from that push and pull.
Yeah. Do you have an example of a song that you wanted to do, or someone wanted you to do, and it wasn't happening, and then it did happen? Like, it worked when you thought it couldn't?
Yes, actually. So I was doing an album with, it was kind of a fun experiment both for him and for me, because we were such an odd couple getting together. I did an album with a producer named Rick Rubin, who, for those who don't know Rick Rubin, Rick is kind of known as one of the great gurus in the industry. He's just, like, so zen, and he's all about getting your head in the right space and listening the right way and meditating on things. And
Rick Rubin is the Phil Jackson of the
Of the record world. Absolutely, I would say that's true. And his reputation precedes him because he's just made so many incredible records, and he's helped inspire so many artists. And he inspired me a lot. But we were learning from each other, and so we sang a lot of songs as experiments that didn't make the cut. And one of those songs was a Peter Gabriel song called The Book of Love, which is very simple. It's got these three or four.
That's not who wrote The Book of Love. Peter Gabriel's way later, right?
Who wrote The Book of Love? Oh, no, not that, like, not that one.
The Book of Love is long and boring. No one can read the damn thing.
You know, I think it was, yeah, he wrote that. There was a different Book of Love.
Okay.
Yeah, not the Who Wrote the Book of Love.
Yeah, because that works 10 out of 10 times.
That's a song that does not need, there's an example, a song that does not need my voice on it. But that, and if anybody wants to sample that, can we snap for a sample? No.
Yeah.
Sample anytime you want. Cool.
Well, I have to send, hold on, I'm trying to figure out how we could do that.
Hello? Anybody home?
We don't.
We'll be right back.
We'll be right
back.
And we are back. So, so that's a song where, for whatever reason, that was a time in my life, and that arrangement or whatever it was we were doing, it just, the stuff wasn't in the air. We kind of looked at each other and said, great song. Love the way Peter does it. It's not feeling good. Cut to all these years later, I decided to just throw it into a live stream concert that I did during quarantine. And we had an incredible string quartet. And I said to my music director, Tarek, I said, let's throw in the Book of Love. Why not? I haven't tried it in a long time. And there was just something in the room. It felt really good. It felt great. I felt like, and sometimes you just need life experience. Sometimes you just need to live a little and grow a little. And that can change the pathos of a song.
All right. So knowing what you know now, you've lived more, you've had, you know, you've had sex more. Huh?
Yeah.
You know, you had a couple more meals.
A few more meals.
And you're like, you know what? I'm a different person now.
Yeah.
I know how to do Book of Love.
Yeah.
If you were to tell Josh Groban back in the Rick Rubin, Phil Jackson days,
yeah,
here's why it's not working.
Yeah.
Could you?
I absolutely could.
What would you say?
Yeah. Because I think as I look back at that time in my life, I think I was running from a lot of things. That was a time in my life where, and I think honestly, working with Rick was another kind of way for me to explore in what kind of felt like a little bit of a rebellious way.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I kind of was, I don't know, I was chasing something, or I was running from stuff, and I was feeling, I think as I look back in hindsight, you never know when you're going into patterns in your life that are detached or kind of unhealthy. Our blind spots don't usually see them at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a time when I was kind of in a, I don't know. I was kind of early 30s, like 29, 30, 31 kind of thing. And so I was, I don't know. I think I was too detached. I think I was kind of feeling, I wasn't interested in finding love at that time in my life, I don't think. And so it's like no coincidence that the songs were like the goopy love songs. Just didn't really connect to me at that time.
This is maybe, what's the word? It doesn't matter, but it's this question sucks.
Okay.
Anybody who knows music knows that's not the case. That's what I'm looking for. Like,
yeah,
maybe this is obviously, but you know, when you're singing a song, you obviously need to connect to the lyric and find some type of, at least analogously, way that to interpret it, right?
Yeah.
But also, if you're singing the Star Spangled Banner, you know what I mean? Like, that's great. And that's always, what makes something really, really special.
Sure.
But you could sing songs and not even know what they mean.
Sure. And fans can listen to songs and not know what they mean.
Yeah.
I sing songs in five different languages and I know what they mean, but to an audience member, a lot of times, and this is a crazy thing too, sometimes an audience member will feel it. They'll be crying and they won't know what it means, and then they'll translate it later and they'll be like, that is exactly what I thought it meant.
I remember noticing after a breakup I had in, I think 2014, I grew up loving and love Boys to Men. I know every lyric.
Sure.
End of the road.
Oh, I love it. I would snap because they snap during that song, but then we would have to cut to a commercial.
Yeah, break. Or every time just another mustache, pair of glasses, a hat. By the way, I'm far enough into this podcast where I'm comfortable just pitching it, but you came here 8 months ago. You're going to hate. I'm sorry. Put this on. And I could sing the songs, but it wasn't until after this particular breakup, which wasn't even my first breakup, where I'm hearing them for the first time of like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Also a perfect example of End of the Road.
Yeah.
And just being down on one knee or a bended knee specifically.
Yeah.
And it meant something different to me.
Sure. Sometimes we're not ready for a song as a listener, and certainly sometimes we're not ready for a song as the singer. And I think that's a perfect example. Both of our examples are exactly what that is just sometimes you need to be in the right place in your life to tell a story truthfully in music.
But why can't you just sing that song in your 30s?
Well, I could have sung it, you know. And some of the things I could say, yes, I could have sung it and I could have you know, I could have approximated what that might feel like or some kind of truthfulness to it. But audiences are, they know better. They really do. I've tried to, you know, you try to pull one over sometimes where you say, I'm going to sing this song because I think it sounds cool or it's a little bit different from me or from what I'm going through, but I'm going to sing it anyway because I think I can get away with it. And more times than not, fans know better.
Well, what about a song that you've done for a decade? And I'm wanting to connect with you as a stand-up comedian who, and I've talked about this on before, a big part of the craft and one of my biggest weaknesses is my ability to continue to do the same stuff, which is what it is, but I feel like a liar.
I see.
I feel...
Because you're able to do the same material with the same amount of freshness for so long.
And because I can't.
Oh, you can't.
Right. And it's not even freshness because the freshness goes away.
Right.
It's in a relationship, the freshness goes away. It's not about staying fresh. It's about finding other versions of things to supplement or replace the freshness.
With the same material.
With the same material.
Right.
And here's a great example of a specific device that I don't use, but to explain this.
Sure.
A lot of let's say I do stand up next weekend. I had Josh Groban come over the other day and I bombed a little bit, but you know, blah, 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 whatever. That joke's fun. It's great.
Sure.
I now tell that joke in 2 years. There are comedians that will be like, yeah, I had Josh Groban over the other day because the way to get the sense of memory is for it to be the other day.
Sure.
Or like, why? Or it's where it's like, you know, it's funny you bring that up. I had Josh Groban over 2 years ago.
Right.
For whatever it is. So you find ways of not saying the other day or whatever. But there's all these different variables that you have to replace that make it not be present.
Yeah.
And the biggest one is if I've told this joke 20 times, I don't care anymore.
Right.
Right?
But an audience member that hasn't heard the joke before.
But that's what I'm saying. Made me think of it. When you like, the audience knows if you're not connected to it.
Totally.
So,
And you have the ability to change your material with time because jokes can adapt.
Yes.
And in a little bit of a different way than published songs and things like that. For me, the material has to stay the same, but you can find different arrangements. You can find ways to break it down in ways that excite you in new. I do that all the time on tour. If I've had a song that I've been singing for 15 years that is just boring me to tears now because just simply by the mere repetition of it, tour is the time to like get with your band and say, let's do something different with this. Let's do something different because honestly, Your audience kind of appreciates it, too. If you're fresh and you're feeling like you're doing something exciting with it, they can see it in your eyes. They can see it in the way you're doing it.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
There's so many things, and I remember them all, and the caffeine's kicking in and just like... But... So, I want to talk about the arranging thing.
Okay.
But also, the audience knows if it's not fresh. I think it was Kristen Bell was on, and... maybe I'll find the clip and cut to it.
Feeling like you're acting good is not acting good. But something I always try to remember is like, I've worked with so many actors that are like, can I have one more take? I wasn't feeling it. And I, inside my body, not on my face, always like roll my eyes because I'm like, here's what doesn't matter if you feel it. It's great if you do. Here's what matters if the audience feels it. We're not making this movie for you to view solo. Because what I always do is go to the director and say, did you feel that? Like, did the people behind the camera feel that? That's what's important. Like, I have seen my work, of which I don't watch a ton of it because I can't stomach myself. Watching myself, some of my most off days where I wasn't feeling like I was doing a good job, I can witness as an audience member and go, that was entirely believable and I'm really proud of that scene.
I was struggling with something, blah, 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 doesn't matter. But she said something, I'm paraphrasing, about it doesn't, I mean, there's subtext to this and I'm ignoring, but it doesn't matter as an actor if you feel like you were in it. I mean, it does matter, but in this specific example, if the director tells you they got it, they got it.
Okay.
And sometimes, you know, you're not going to be able to be there every time. We want to be so special.
Sure.
And I connect with that for a couple reasons. One, I can't be special every time, if at all.
Yeah.
And two, I can't, I'm just one of the pieces. I don't want to, you don't want to be needy.
Right.
You know, I don't want to have that reputation. I also don't want to feel that way.
Sure.
Are you sure this is okay? Or can we do,
That's partly the ego mind too, kind of getting in the way of being the vessel because we want to have control over, you know, what we put out there. And a lot of times we get lost in our own heads. I've dealt with this as an actor and I've dealt with this as a musician of like in my own head having an idea or my ego having an idea of what I'm putting across or how I want to make it special or fresh. And, you know, a producer saying, we've got it, Or a producer saying, we don't have it. When I said to myself, ooh, I nailed that.
That's why I was asking about you and your pianist, even if you agree, because of, anyway.
It's good not to micromanage sometimes. It's good, I've heard from actor friends that they have gotten parts at the auditions they were sure they blew.
Yeah.
You know, that they walked away going, well, there's no way I got that part. And there was something,
right,
maybe in their suckiness, they were letting something out that was out of their control that the director saw as uniquely them and really special. That stuff happens all the time. And in music, it's no different. You have to kind of do the preparation, work, control, so that you can go out there and let yourself not be the manager of what you're putting out there.
But that contradicts the thing that I struggle with so much, which is... I think I'm now, after over a decade, I'm a good stand-up comedian. Finally. Yeah. It took me way longer than my peers to be a good stand-up comedian, but I'm good now.
Okay.
I think I could be really good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not consistently, but I do have moments, and whether this is real or not, this is my feeling.
Okay.
There's something special when it happens. Mm-hmm. And I can't summon it up consistently enough yet.
You just feel it in the room.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is special. That's what I'm connecting when you're saying you can feel something special.
Sure.
But when it's not,
mm-hmm.
how much of the ego is getting in the way versus how much is it just your instincts of knowing this is not special. I know everyone is saying it is. We got to talk. We got to rearrange it. We got to figure something out.
Right.
This point in my life, I don't know enough about love or whatever patterns we don't recognize yet.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And I think that the nights that you're talking about where something was really special, it means that it was both exciting and special for you and exciting and special for the audience, which is actually a really, it is sometimes a rare thing when you're performing a lot where you are just as excited by yourself as the audience was excited by you. There are going to be plenty of nights, in fact, most nights, where you are not excited by yourself, of yourself.
And it doesn't mean that they're not.
That doesn't mean that they're not. And so how many times have I walked off stage going, well, that sucked, and I've gotten a great review?
And do you believe it?
It certainly helps. It certainly makes you say to yourself, okay, step out of yourself for a second and realize that, maybe you didn't need to be so grumpy. Like that was, you actually, for that audience, that was, you left yourself on stage. We get jaded about our own uniqueness because we're in us all the time.
Yeah.
And so, and I dealt with this 8 shows a week when I did Broadway. That was a whole different side of this because on tour, I can change up the material. I can change arrangements. I can play around and make it fresh for me.
Right.
On Broadway, you are of service to the work. You're of service to the material.
And it's choreographed with so many other people.
Absolutely. You're a cog in that wheel for everybody else. You're all leaning on each other. And so the ways to find the freshness are different. And it's also different because you're acting and you're rediscovering things about a part. But I found doing Broadway that just like finding a member of the audience that I knew was new, looking them in the eyes, because we had a show that was very interactive, and seeing their response for the first time made the fact that it was show 200 for me go away.
What is it when it's special for you and the audience? Is there anything you could explain to me? What is it that you could walk away and say, that's why it's special? And is that something you could recreate?
I think, and maybe it's different for you, but I find that the nights that are special for me and the audience are not the nights where I knew what I wanted to accomplish mm-hmm. it and I nailed it and they loved it. It's the nights where I was on a tightrope too, and something out of the ordinary happened, or somebody yelled something and we riffed on it, or a song came out of nowhere, or we started jamming and something, I feel like it's the tightrope and then getting to the other side that makes it special, because there are nights where I feel like I knew what I wanted to do and I crushed it. And that's a good feeling, but the really special nights are the nights where you can be your own audience and say, ooh, that's scary, and I got through it. And not only did I get through it, I thrived. And and that's fun.
So that's what it is for me. Maybe there's more or more specific, but I feel it's the most special when I'm in the audience too.
Yeah.
And that's where it's tough to... It's hard to be present when, like you said, these are the beats to hit.
Right.
Because you're focusing on the beats and not the moment.
Right.
So it's finding that balancing act of being present with the audience, but also, and that's what it is, it's finding extemporaneous things within.
Right.
Do you ever, because you're we just met, and we've been texting a bit, and I've sent some of our messages to my girlfriend who says that he's you, not just because of the look, but You're a weird boy.
I'm a weird boy.
Yeah, you're a weird boy.
A little bit.
And you're a silly, goofy goose.
I'm a real goofy, yes.
But your music, at least the way I have interpreted it,
sure.
is, I don't think this is the best word for it, but comparatively serious.
Yeah.
Right?
I would, sure.
And that's a side that we obviously all have. Yeah. And you, you know, that's your stage for that.
Yeah.
Do you get, you know, a desire to just... Let me give you an example.
Sure.
And I know I talk too much.
No, no.
I was telling the comments.
is the comment camera over here?
No, just that's my camera. So like when they're like, stop interrupting. Well, then stop watching.
Listen, the comments are why we're here.
Yeah. Hey, guys and girls. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Girls and guys. Girls come first. At least the girls that I sleep with do. It's a fucking joke. Relax. Hi, I'm Rick Glassman from the Take Your Shoes Off podcast, and I'm not going to bullshit you like those other bullshit podcasts that are always like, oh, you got to try this boner pill. It's guaranteed to make your boners. No, man. The only thing I talk about are things that are downright great, and that's why we're here with Helix Mattress. Maybe you like sleeping on your side. Maybe you like sleeping on your back, or, you know, maybe you're just like partying in bed, right? And you don't do much sleeping anyway, right? Sorry. Something in my eye. Because you're just having sex in it. Helix Mattress isn't just for sex, but it's great for sex. Listen, let's say you're a loser dork guy, and all you're doing is having sex with girls and going soft and not knowing that the G-spot is where it is and how to handle it. Which, by the way, it's just like a 2.5 inches in and it fills with blood, okay? So like, it's up on the roof, so sometimes if you need to, if you could push on their pelvic area down, that'll help it do it. For you losers, don't even pay attention to how to get a girl off. All you need to do is go to helixsleep.com/Tyso and get up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows and get yourself a Helix. That's helixsleep.com/Tyso for up to $200 on all mattress orders and 2 free pillows. Oh, and if you're a loser girl that doesn't know how to get a guy to finish, you know, have his orgasm, I suggest you, I don't know, take a walk, because the only thing easier than getting a guy off is going to helixsleep.com/Tyso for up to $200 off all mattress orders. Get a Helix. Zoom in. Box of Awesome.
Box of Awesome.
This spring, as you get back to the outdoors, take Box of Awesome on all your adventures. Let me tell you what this thing is, because I didn't quite understand it at first. You go to boxofawesome.com and you see there's all these different things you could pick from. Cool drink tumblers, really nice bag. I got a good bag. There's a whole bunch of stuff. They partner with under the radar brands and curate this really cool collection where every month you could take a quiz to understand what you like and don't like, and they send you these very cool things. Also, during COVID, they bought $47 million worth of goods from all of these brands. I think that's pretty cool. Or should I say, I think that's pretty Box of Awesome. No matter what you're into, Box of Awesome has you covered. Style and grooming goods, barware, cooking tools and outdoor gear. Box of Awesome has collections for every part of your life.
Really, Rick? Every part?
That's right, Josh Groban. To get started, take the quiz at boxofawesome.com. I do think it's cool. I want to see what's new, because they release new boxes every month around tons of different categories. It's free to sign up, and you could skip a month, or you could cancel any time. Each box only costs $45, but has at least $70 worth of gear inside. And you get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and use code TYSO at checkout.
You're saying that's boxofawesome.com, code TYSO, for 20% off your first box?
That's right, Josh Groban. Now, why don't you talk about how we first met?
I commented. And
oh yeah,
and
you commented on one of the clips,
and here we are. So yeah,
you commented, and it was rewarding when you commented, because sometimes there'll be people that comment, yeah. and I'm like, oh, that's awesome, I would love to have them on, or not comment, it's just, whatever it
sure,
is,
whatever,
some interaction,
yeah.
Yeah, you meet them. But you're someone who I've been trying to get on, and I had already messaged you.
I didn't ever see those messages because they showed up in my, you know, like requested
yeah.
messages folder, and
I didn't think there was any malice.
It was no offense. I had no idea the messages even came in. So
not taken.
So I had a hunch, like when you commented back, you know, you should come on the show, I said to myself, I wonder if he maybe sent me a message, or maybe I should message him. So I pressed the message button on your account to say, hey, let's make this happen.
Yeah.
And I had seen that other messages had come in.
I love that. It made me feel like you know, I was here already. You know, like, I'm not just trying to capitalize on an opportunity.
No, it was really nice to see. And of course, with social media, things get lost all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm such a fan of the show. And
thanks, man.
And I meant every word when I said it. It's like, it's just such a feel good thing. I was commenting on a clip of with you and your friend Adam.
Shout out to Adam, right?
Very, very funny, great man. And you guys were just stoned beyond
so high
existence. And it was just a very funny, good feel good clip.
That episode before it came out, that was the highest I'd ever been on the podcast. and we got high on purpose because the first one, it was like, did we do enough? Did we do too many jokes, not enough comments?
Oh yeah.
Oh, more jokes. They're like, well, all right, let's show you.
Yeah. You read the comments. You really are.
I do read comments.
Do you take comment criticism to heart, or is it generally?
I don't want to mean to invite more
trolls. No, of course not. Bad question.
No. I should teach a class on it.
Okay.
I mean, I'm flawed and human and blah, 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 sure. But I do have this tool that I found out. I was on the road and I did a show on Friday night and I'm the guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just crushed. I'm
absolutely.
And it felt great.
Yeah.
And then the next day, I did so bad.
Okay.
That the club asked if it would be okay with me if they had the feature do an hour and I do 20 minutes.
Okay.
And I said to her, you know, it's your club, whatever you want. That hurts my feelings,
sure.
But let's do it.
Yeah.
And I went out to the parking lot, and my feelings were hurt, but yep. I called my dad, and yeah. I said, I'm so glad I don't have to do an hour.
Oh, wow.
Like, I hadn't figured it out yet.
Sure, sure.
And what I realized was good shows and bad shows have the same thing in common. Whatever feeling it gives you, it goes away in a day.
Absolutely.
Or whatever it is.
Yep.
So comments, when people give me great comments, it's like, relax. You know, I'm glad you buy my merch.
Sure.
But
or come on my show.
Or come on the show.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on the comment. And I don't want to talk too much.
But I know exactly what you're saying, because, you know, anybody who says just don't read the comments. Well, it's, you know, you're putting something out there. You want to know that people are responding
to
it.
You.
You're showing it to you. It means something to you. I'll never understand the people that are just like, I don't read comments. I don't read reviews.
I think the reason is for their well-being if they don't take it in.
Oh, it's 100% the healthy thing to do, but it's hard not to peek because you care.
I do.
Yeah.
I'm also like, I literally talk to them sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It would be like doing as a stand-up comedian,
sure,
to not listen to that,
of course,
that feedback.
Yeah. And especially during a pandemic, that's what we have now,
yeah,
is the back and forth between those comments.
Yeah. But anyway, the shitty ones, very rarely is there a great burn. But if so, it's like, yeah, you know.
Gotta hand it
to them. But if not, it's like, you know, that's... But I had this Adam Ray episode. It was Adam Ray 2.0.
Yep.
So stoned, so embarrassed by it. Watching it and seeing the Rick that I have, that when I was younger, who lacked such awareness, and I'm just highlighting it. Also, coincidentally, I don't know what was going on. I was a little sick. I pissed myself.
Oh, really?
The day before I came out Monday, I pissed myself Saturday night. I woke up Sunday.
Oh, not on. You didn't do it on the podcast.
No.
God, I was like, I did not notice that in that clip.
I woke up Sunday morning, pissed myself.
Yeah.
Rewatched the edit. I can't post this.
Okay.
Shout out to George Krikas, who was helping me at the pod at the time.
Thanks, George.
Blah blah blah. Yep. He said you got to post it.
Yeah.
You did well.
You needed the push.
I love a good push.
You love a push.
Let me go back to the other thing, and I'm going to stop.
Sure.
About you being a goofy boy.
Okay.
I am on this drama about autism, okay? And it's serious.
Mm-hmm.
And we finish our scene. And we're great. We're out. We got out a little bit early. Hold for room tone. 2, 3. I fart.
Or 5, 6, 7, 8.
Or 5, 6, 7, 8 if we're dancing.
And then you let one out.
I let one out. And I giggle.
Okay.
And two other people laugh. And sure, the rest are on an autism show. And that's not what you're supposed to do.
Okay.
But I... What am I gonna not fart during room tone when I'm in a goofy mood? Are you kidding me? I'm number one on the call sheet, baby. You know, make sure to keep the cameras on. Put it in the bloopers.
You know.
But what I'm getting at is, do you ever have that instinct?
That's an appropriate use of power.
The fart?
Yeah, absolutely. Why be number one on the call sheet if you can't fart during
room
tone?
What are we working toward?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's,
go ahead.
Listen. No, I just fully endorse that.
So do you ever get that goofy instinct? And if so, do you fart or whatever the thing is? And if so, do the people know you as a goofy guy?
So earlier in my career, like the first 5 to 8 years, I was deadly afraid of letting Goofy side out because, you know, the music was so serious and my voice is, you know, it's something that I do. You said like we're not all one thing. And so when I drift into like my love of music and singing these songs, it's not disingenuous. I love it. That's a side of me. And when I was doing musical theater, I loved the most serious roles. Mm-hmm. And I get deeply invested in it and I love it. And then when the page turns and it's time for, you know, the in-between, I have always wanted to go to that place. But I think my first 5 years, I was really, really scared to do that. Now, that thing you're mentioning, that farting during the room tone vibe, is something
FDTRTV.
Wow. Yeah. I do that as much as possible on stage now. Not necessarily fart.
Sure.
I'm not mic'd that low.
Big
but,
miss.
I mean, well, I'm not saying it's not happening. It's just, you know.
It's just a beautiful orchestra, you know?
Yeah, there are times where the band knows, you know, or, sure. You know, or I've burped on mic before. Sometimes it goes up the other way.
Intentionally?
No, not intentionally. Right, right. I'm not one of those intentional burpers. I'm jealous of people who can be like, check this out. Blech. It comes out of nowhere. I had a Mountain Dew once during show like 300 of a tour that went way too long. And I belched.
300 of a tour? One run?
It was like a 2-year tour. And we were just going on and kept adding dates and adding dates. And you start, it's like when people say they have their first kid and they like buy all the most precious things for that kid. And by the 10th kid, it's just like they're just rolling them in paper towels.
I've heard by the second kid, but I know what you
Maybe
mean.
The second kid too. So we'd been touring so long on this tour that I was starting to drink Mountain Dew and not really care as much about like the pregame. And so I did. I burped during a very, very serious Italian song.
And how do you just, it didn't happen?
You know, that might have been actually the moment where I decided after everybody laughed and it was like, okay, where I was like, oh, you know what? We can have a little bit of fun.
Could you paint that picture? What do you mean? How big is the audience?
Oh, the audience was probably about 10,000 people. We were at a big outdoor venue.
Wow.
And
will you do it? Will you recreate that moment for a second?
Well, sure. I'm standing there and I'm looking out and, you know, at these outdoor venues, you hit a certain time in the show and the sun is just setting. You know, you could usually go on before sunset. Mm-hmm. And so the sun is just in, you know, I try to plan certain songs for those magic sky moments at certain venues. And so I have this song called Per Te. And which means for you. And I'm just thinking, okay, this is about 4 songs in, by the way. This is still, I still have a lot of show left to do. And so I step to the mic and I can feel sometimes as a singer, you can feel you got a bubble kind of brewing, but you're going to do your diaphragm work. You're going to push it down.
Diaphragm work?
Like it's the part of your...
I'm saying, how do you do it?
Well, with diaphragm support, you're kind of basically allowing for your breath to stay kind of in this ball in your stomach. That's like in your lower chest area.
When you're talking now, where is it? Where's your breath?
It's when I'm talking, it all goes out the window. I'm like way up here, and it's
could you
not,
talk from your diaphragm?
Well, I could talk. Yeah, I could talk from down here, and I could really support myself.
Am I doing it now?
Now you're doing it.
Is
yes.
that my diaphragm?
That's your diaphragm.
Oh,
yes.
That's here.
That's there. Yeah, I think so. Okay. Yeah, I'd have to. Yeah, but yeah, it's there.
If we have time, I'm going to ask you to give me a little.
Sure,
but go on.
My pleasure. And so I'm in the middle of the song. Actually, not even in the middle. I just started because singing brings the things out. That's why you don't want to drink Mountain Dew 15 minutes before you hit
singing
the stage.
Singing brings the things out.
It just because
like
you can't
literally gas.
You can't hide it because you're focusing. There's so much going on in your breath and in your body when you're singing hard notes that you just don't have any muscles left to control burpiness and indigestion and things like that. So I'm going per te vivro, and it just ad vivro just kind of came out. And there was at first the band knew immediately because they've got in-ear monitors, so they can hear things in a way more detail than the audience. The audience kind of started to laugh, and then they started to laugh a lot more.
But are you still going as they're laughing?
Oh yeah. And I'm just like looking around going,
are you embarrassed?
Oh my, I was mortified. Absolutely mortified. Because again, that was now I've grown into like, let's have, you know, I would have made more of a meal out of it now and had fun with it. Back then I was still kind of in that control, like everything has to be perfect and serious. So I was terrified. And then I made a joke about it after the song and everybody cracked up. And it was one of those special nights. That was one of those tightrope, something went wrong. Something went left.
Yeah, it feels like we had fun with it.
Yeah, and at the end of the night, for whatever reason, just the vibe was we all shared something that was unique to that night. And so, yeah, I guess that's we all just need to burp and fart on stage a little more.
I've been saying that for weeks.
Yeah.
So that moment happens. Do you, you hypothesize that that was maybe a turning point for you, but even if it wasn't, or that was the start of something that could have been.
Sure.
Now, when you're feeling it, do you suppress it? Do you weigh the pros and cons? Do you have an instinct?
It's instinct, because now you got to really kind of vibe check where the audience is throughout the course of a night. And that's been the really, really fun thing to do now is, you know, some songs have a very serious introduction, you know, and especially if 90% of your music is more serious, finding the spots for lightheartedness or improvisation or going into the audience or, you know, whatever it is, you got to pick your moments. And that's the kind of thing that has made the shows way more fun, because there's a whole lot of things I don't know what's going to happen each night, and that makes it exciting.
Why is an introduction so serious? Because you're saying the origins of the song, what it means to you?
Exactly. Sometimes a song, you know, has a story behind it or a reason why you decided to sing it that isn't a joke. In fact, most of the stories behind my songs are not jokes. And so, you know, it's
goofiness isn't jokes to me.
Like, that's true. But I would say maybe lighthearted. Maybe they aren't lighthearted. And goofiness, silliness, you know, it lifts up the mood. And so if you can make an audience laugh and cry in the same night, and it can all fit within the realm of an honest portrayal of who you are, that's a fun night.
I'm disappointed with myself, but also I feel like I made the right judgment to not play into when you said it lifts you up so I could put it on a mountain. But I wanted to show you my diaphragm work.
It's true.
Most people... I'm right, but most people will disagree with me and have.
Fair enough.
There's a lightheartedness, yes, but jokes, goofiness, isn't taking away from reality. It isn't taking away from even the truth of something serious.
Right.
It's truly just an additional perspective.
That's right.
And
who would disagree with that?
The theory, I'm not sure, but the practically all the time.
Yeah.
I have gotten better at finding this and more specifically understanding how to communicate it. But, when you're here and I made a joke that I'm bombing, I don't remember what the thing was, but I said something and I felt a disconnect, that doesn't matter and happens all the time. But when you're bowling, you know, if you want to keep getting strikes, it's okay to get a 9.
It's finding your rhythm.
Yes.
And it's the same in comedy as it is in music.
It's just communicating with a person or an audience.
Right.
But sometimes you want everything to be so special that, you know, the calibration phase could throw you.
Yeah.
I still get a little uncomfortable in a calibration phrase, but I've accepted that it's the reality.
What's that? What's a calibration?
So, for example, we're just starting out, and hey, Josh, how's, you know?
You're gauging the air.
Hey, how's your dick? Or whatever, and you go, what?
Yeah, whoa.
Okay.
Whoa. You went to 11 when we were supposed to calibrate to a 3.
No, yeah. So, my instinct earlier on, and still somewhat is, okay, here's this tight wire. I'm not in a room talking to Josh and hosting him I am, but we're also making a product.
Sure.
Right? And it's a comedy product.
Yeah.
To me, and this would be wrong.
Apologies that this conversation has been so serious, but...
No. I love this.
We've had some... This has been a very enlightening conversation, though. Your questions have been phenomenal.
Oh, yes. But my instincts for a while, and this would get me into trouble, and luckily that I've turned it into... what my job is,
sure.
is doing something, I don't mean pranking, but a joke, a fart, or whatever,
sure.
To where, imagine if Josh Groban comes over and blah, 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 blah. I'm doing that. It's a joke. Yeah. But I can't tell you it's a joke, because then the situation isn't real. And I'm going to go on too long, but I think I could do this in under 2 minutes.
Okay.
Maybe we'll fast forward if it's too long. A big thing I've talked about in this where I struggle as a stand-up comedian, and I'm okay with it, is I prioritize believability over the laughs. Because if it's funny, great. That's not... Who cares?
Sure.
I mean, you need to be funny, but you need to believe it.
It needs to be funny and true, and then there's that universal thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's like when you hear a song and you say to yourself, well, it's kind of risky, but it makes me feel good. the universal thing about comedy or music or anything else is, well, if it makes me feel good, there's going to be a whole lot of other people that probably feel that way too.
Worst case scenario, we saw somebody believing something and doing something honestly.
Uh-huh.
If they're not laughing, they're still engaged.
It's not.
So there are certain jokes, I don't want to do too much of this, but there's certain jokes where it's like, it's funny, but they don't know it is. Now, you could say it's not funny, but you're wrong. It's my fault for not delivering it properly, not understanding how to communicate this.
Got it.
But it's funny.
Yeah.
How do I show them? So there would be a world where I leaned into that thing with you because it's not about us. It's about watching this later.
Okay.
I did a stand-up set, and maybe I'll cut to a clip.
This gentleman you may recognize from NBC's Undateable. So please do...
Jesus Christ, I fucked up. I have an intro I want you to do. Sorry.
You want me to do this intro? Okay.
Yeah.
This is unorthodox. It's for real? Okay. I don't know what the fuck is going on, honestly. That is going to be a...
What's happening?
My grandfather wasn't just a hotel owner. What are you fucking doing?
Don't start my time yet. I gave you the wrong. I just keep them together.
Okay. You keep what together? You want to read this one?
Yeah.
Okay. You guys are in for a real treat. Please put your hands together for Ron Gladish. All right.
It's Rick Glassman. That is my mistake.
Where I came up with it, it was a taping for Just for Laughs, HBO Montreal. I say that because HBO, cool, but HBO Canada, I don't know nobody's going to see this.
Well, Just for Laughs is pretty famous, right?
Yeah, but I just mean like this isn't my big breakout TV performance.
Got it.
And I had my set. I had just gone through, incidentally, the breakup that I talked to you about.
Okay.
Where blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And I didn't want to do this. And I had this silly idea where the host is ladies and gentlemen, and I walk out and I give him my intro, and okay, and he reads the intro, and I realize I gave him the wrong intro, and basically there's a back and forth, and it's this 8-minute set. I don't start until almost 4 minutes in. It's very weird. The audience was very uncomfortable.
So because the intro is that long?
I just kept messing up. I accidentally gave him the eulogy to my grandfather's funeral.
Yeah, well, that's quite an accident.
He didn't die, but I always kept it on me
in
case.
Oh, sure.
Because he was the only grandpa I had left. I wanted.
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunate. Is what that is.
Well, it sucked. It's with the audience is watching.
I mean, be honest. You did that. I mean, that's a real. You did that on purpose, right?
Yes. The audience doesn't know that.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And it's funny that
that is funny. Now, I mean, knowing that there's a little bit of a wink, wink, where an audience should be able to say at that point.
That here's the thing, and no disrespect.
Yeah.
People. A person is smart. People are stupid.
Uh huh.
I'm shocked all the time at how much people don't know something is.
Well, and they bounce off each other's energy, right? And it's just the same way when you watch, you know, award shows are such a study in like group comedy psychology. And like the idea of like, are we collectively going to decide we're for this person or against them or for a joke or a bit or against them? Somebody might tell a joke that killed one night and the other night everybody just decides I'm offended by that or I don't like that or I'm in a bad mood tonight. Yeah. I'm not going to give it up. And, you know, so it just sounds like it was a good thing that was a wrong crowd.
No, here's the point I'm making.
Yeah.
It bombed.
Okay.
Intentionally. And also, by the end of the set, the host came out to give me a note that I just found out, no, my grandfather just passed away. And my parents told me late because they didn't want me to ruin this, and I'm not going to make it so I could at least have a few words to say. And I reread the eulogy, but now instead of an upbeat comics intro, I'm crying.
So you leaned way into
this. At the end, people have to know.
Sure.
But the point is, I wasn't doing this to do well for the audience.
Okay.
I'm doing this so when you're watching it on TV with the intro or YouTube where I put it, comedian gives wrong intro to host. Now we're all in on it.
Great.
The audience wasn't in on it.
I see.
So in life, a lot of times, my instinct used to be, I'm in on it.
Right.
And I assumed you know what's going on.
Right.
So I'm making you uncomfortable. But
sure.
I'm joking.
I'm a fan of that kind of, you know, Andy Kaufman, you know, Tim Heidecker does stand-up comedy that's just masterful at this, of just like making you so uncomfortable that you want to, you're your own biggest fan of, like, this is just tickling me to no end how uncomfortable I'm making you. And there's an art to that.
Yeah.
I find it funny. I think it's hilarious. I would have loved watching that online. I would have thought that was hysterical. But yeah, you're right. There's a certain audience.
But you have to find that, because some people don't, either they don't want it or they don't know.
Right.
And that's just what I meant by the perspective of, like, it's funny because you have that, people call it the comedy eye, right? Like,
sure.
It's funny because you could see that. Anyway,
yeah,
too much.
I think try it again. I think it's...
No, I did it. It was a massive success.
Oh, it happened again, and it was great.
No, it was the only time I did it.
Right.
My agent, who I'm no longer with, was...
Somehow I thought this was a bad story.
No,
no. This was...
The point...
In the end, what you're saying is that it killed.
It did well enough.
Yeah.
But the point I'm making is...
It didn't kill your grandpa, but it killed.
Correct. Yeah. The point is, one perspective is this audience not knowing... why it, not at least questioning, is this real?
Yeah.
Versus this audience who knows it's fake.
Ah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, that's a...
It was a long walk.
Whew.
Maybe we'll trim it down.
But that's I think from a comedy standpoint, that's a tightrope that a lot of comedians... I don't have as much of that, you know, struggle in music, you know, because I'm... I think that for me with music, there's a certain amount of, I'm not ever trying to pull one over, you know, or trying to balance that. Is it real or is it not real? I have fun doing that with, you know, using my super serious voice for like comedy purposes.
Yeah.
Is fun. Like when Kimmel asked me to do Kanye's tweets or Trump's tweets or whatever, and I sing them just in the most glorious fashion. That's kind of the closest I'll get to like, is he in on it? Does he know it's funny?
I always want people to be in on it, but you can't tell them. So the risk is they aren't.
Right.
And that's what's tough with connecting with people over goofiness.
Yeah. Goofiness is risky, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't attempt.
Yeah.
Because the world needs it.
That I don't know if you're being like playful, but that is...
It's true.
That's like, goofiness is risky.
Yeah.
What a like... It's I'm not crying, but I felt myself, my eyes watering up. Like, yeah,
I just have allergies right now. I just
Fuck, I'm sorry.
As
man.
You started crying, like a little pollen just got in my
How
nostril.
Are you? I mean, not okay. Good.
No, thank
what
you.
What do we do?
Thank you, though. No, I'm good. I just needed to just do a little sniffle and a little sippy, and now I'm right as rain.
What is, really? I mean, I could bring you in here.
No, I'm still good. I haven't schwitzed once.
Funny choice of words, because as any fan of yours knows, that your dad was Jewish but converted.
That's right. My dad's side of the family is Jewish, yeah.
So you come from a not completely non-Jewish family, but with Jewish roots.
Yeah.
You do have, if I could say quite literally, Jewish roots. Like, you have a thing. Are you, in your head, Jewish? Part Jewish? What do you connect with it?
I think I'll always feel part Jewish because it's my family history and it's something I'm proud of. And I think that from a strictly what religious category do I fall into? You know, I'd say it's pretty ambiguous. I think that's a quest that is a fun quest for me. I find wonderment in the kind of agnostic theism. I find... You know, that there are so many flaws in all of the rigid ways of doing whichever four or five of the main ones there are out there. And I enjoy learning from all of them, and I enjoy the kind of finding more of a personal quest with that. And I think, honestly, I think that's probably where my dad fit into it as well. I think he didn't so much convert as he did decide to just kind of open to more possibilities and be a little more, have a little more of a personal relationship with what spirituality means to him. And that's kind of where I am as well.
There's the type of goofiness that you have, I maybe inaccurately associate with Jewish. There's like a Jewish shtick.
Great compliment.
That's fair to say.
Well, and my dad has that. And
yeah.
I feel, you know, my mom wears her heart on her sleeve and is very outwardly emotive about things. And my dad shows, you know, his love through a very kind of Groucho Marx-y kind of, you know, borscht belt kind of humor, and that's, I just kind of grew up with that sensibility with him, and it's something that I'm happy that he passed down.
I mean, I want to edit this out because I hate messing up momentum so much, but I'm feeling a little insecure right now about you outside.
No. You don't have to. Okay. I'm very comfortable.
Really?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because I know we're being safe. I got a nice breeze here. I can hear you loud and clear. I mean, you can see it's like a Beyonce fan right now on me. I'm feeling this is straight up luxurious.
Have you ever worked with her to know about her fans?
About these kind of fans?
No, any fans. Any fans. Have you worked with Beyonce?
I have worked with Beyonce.
Doing what?
We sang together at the Oscars in like 2004, I think it was. I had a song that was nominated, and Beyonce was hired to be the singer of all the nominated songs that year. And so the option
was... What was the song?
It was called Believe from the Polar Express.
And you didn't win.
I did not win. No, I did not win. I don't remember which song won. But it was, you know, they said, you know, look, Beyonce can sing it by herself, or we'll let you sing it with Beyonce if
I'll
you'd
sing
like.
It with
I said,
Beyonce.
Yeah, I'll walk through door number two. Sure. Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah.
Is that still, because you've sung with, I mean, everyone. I mean, you've sung with icons.
I'm very lucky.
And you told me before that you sung with Elton John. I mean, that's nuts. Is it still like, is it still, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah,
are
it
you
is.
One of them?
No. I'll never feel, you know, I will never feel worthy. You know, the imposter syndrome is absolutely real when you get to stand toe to toe with somebody that you've idolized for so many years and has taught you so much as a fan. And so a huge amount when you're, you know, still coming up or have not yet reached that status is just like, okay, well, rather than feel like I have to be eye to eye with this person, accept it for what it is. You've got so much to learn from this experience. And I try to look at every duet that I've had with somebody that is in that stratosphere as like, well, how lucky am I that I get to have this masterclass right now? But I owe it to the masterclass to bring my A game and to do my very, very best so that I don't embarrass myself.
What do you do? This is great, actually. Like what we were talking about with different ways of communicating. What do you do when you're going in and, at least from your perception of these people are here, right? Yeah. They're a little above me.
Yeah, or a lot. Yeah,
at least a little above me.
Okay, yeah.
You know, I look up to them literally.
Yes.
So, is it fair to say it almost feels like you're a guest on their thing?
Sure.
And even if it's a duet and that's not the way it's arranged, you feel that way. Do you feel like the way that I, when you first come over, hey, I'm this way, thank you for your patience, sorry for this, and it's a little too wordy.
Yeah.
Is there something you do to try and connect with these people, or do you just, does that make sense?
I try to go into the planning and rehearsal process with as much adapting to their energy and the way they like to do things as possible. A couple of very different examples. I was lucky enough at the Brooklyn Academy of Music to do a concert honoring Paul Simon, who's another hero of mine. And we got to sing Bridge Over Troubled Water together. And Paul has a way of rehearsing that is meticulous. I mean, we stood with his band and we went through all these different things. And, you know, I just stood back and watched. He had a way he wanted to try things. And then he'd point at me to come in. And then he'd point at the, you know, he had a duduk player, a Turkish flute. And he had a kora player, a stringed instrument from Africa. And he had all these things. He's going, okay, now you stop and you do this. And so at that point, I just needed to remember what it was he had been experimenting with and then just kind of come in on my part. But it was very rehearsed. Another example, I feel very guilty name dropping, but these are examples that are really, really have been really interesting, and we'll go in the book at some point. I got to sing with Aretha Franklin at Radio City Music Hall, and we sang one of my songs, "You Raise Me Up," and she wanted to sing it. I'm going, oh my gosh, this is the greatest experience of my life, and that was an experience where I went to her dressing room beforehand. She had the boombox, she had it playing. And she had the boombox and she had her family in there and it was 120 degrees in there. She loved the heat. And so it was hot, hot, hot in that dressing room. And it was very loose. It was like, maybe I'll just kind of come in here. Maybe we'll just kind of do this there.
She said that.
Yeah. And I'm trying to like in my mind take notes going, Aretha comes in here. Then I come in here. And then we go, okay, thank you, Ms. Franklin. I'm so honored to be doing this. I'll leave you alone. And I just can't wait for this. And then we went out there. And the only thing I needed to know from moment one was when the mic goes to her mouth, my mic goes down. And then when
so there's
she,
no duet moment?
When she, we did choose a couple of harmony moments that were really nice, but it had to be entirely instinctual on the stage. It had to be like, okay, I'm getting the look from her that it's okay that we can do this together now. Otherwise, it was like, I'm not going to step on any of that.
And you feel safe? Have you earned this? You've worked with people enough to where you know, I'll find this? Or is there a rigidness?
The I, the confidence that I started to have was that I'll be able to read the energy. Is that, you know, in the same way in improv comedy or whatever else, it's like when I go out there, you have to have the confidence that whatever your partner throws at you, you can say yes to it.
Yeah.
And so a great duet partner, and this is the one thing that all of the greats that have been able to sing with have in common, is they're really good partners. They really are good at the invisible energy of letting, in this case, me, know where they want to flow, where they want to go. And so when I'm now in a position where I can sing with younger singers or people that are, you know, just coming up or students, it's important for me to have their back on stage, to not view it as like, okay, kid, you know, let's do this. It's really let them know that I have their back, yeah, and I'm going to give them the same energy.
How do you tell them that?
A lot of times it's just giving them a glance that is like, we got this, or if we're watching each other, making sure we cut off on our notes at the same time, sometimes I'll just feel like this person has something, there's magic in the air, they've got it going on, and I'll just point at them to just say, keep going, you know? And those moments when they were handed to me on stage were some of the most pivotal learning experience moments that I was given by some of those singers that I looked up to. So that's my favorite thing when I get to sing with students.
When you're singing this song with Aretha Franklin versus this song with an up-and-comer and or somebody who's not Aretha Franklin, you're still, and your job is the same. I'm singing this part to this show, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
What is the mindset? In an analogy, it would be if I'm playing basketball with Blake Griffin versus I'm playing basketball with comedians.
Me.
To where, with you, to where it's like I'm the star versus they're the star.
Sure.
Even though my job is the same.
Yeah.
Is there more confidence in one of them? Is it just a different mindset? Does that question make sense?
Oh, sure. There's definitely more confidence when you're, you know, working with somebody where you've had more experience than they have.
You're more confident because you've had more experience versus you're with somebody who you know could elevate you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it just comes down to just, even if you've reached a certain level of success, you still get starstruck. You still get nervous by somebody that you've admired.
Yeah.
If I've got no history with somebody that I'm singing with, or I don't...
You've never met them.
I've never met them, and it's not somebody I've listened to since I was 5 years old. It's just, you know, we're all human. It's just different. It's
yeah.
My fear of messing up because I want to be there for them, or my confidence of just, I want to do a good job. There's a different level of fear. If I've got somebody that I'm working with that is just starting out, then I don't want to be a wrong anchor for them. I want to be somebody that they feel like they could be lifted by our duet. And so that's a whole different kind of responsibility. It's one is don't fuck up, and the other one is don't fuck them up.
Oh, that's kind.
Well, it's why I love duets, because it's a, you know, and why I love the collaborative nature of theater too, because there's that unspoken energy that you're passing to each other, and you've got all these people with their arms crossed going, okay, guys, give us something. And you're doing it together. It's a cool thing.
Maybe my music history is wrong, but Paul Simon didn't write that song for him, right? He wrote it for
Art Garfunkel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there something to where you're doing that song where like from the origins, he is directing somebody else. Is he directing you the way he directed Art Garfunkel? Do you ask those questions? Do you want it to be the same versus where do you want to honor the real thing?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. In this particular situation, because I was one of a number of artists that were there to interpret his work to honor him, I think he stepped back a little bit from the here's how I'd like you to sing it vibe, because I think he was genuinely interested in hearing how each singer was going to take on his songs. So when he came in, he sang his part and then we harmonized, and that was just the most incredible experience. But when I sat and played and sang, I think he had the kindness and was, I think, really touched by the fact that everybody was there to sing his music for him in their own way, that he left that part a little bit alone. If it had been another situation and he'd had notes about how to sing it, I would have, of course, listened to any time.
Yeah. I want to go back to this Sara Bareilles thing.
Sure.
Also, I forgot the name of the show, but I knew them, but I became a fan of both Sara Bareilles and Ben Folds from that a cappella show. Do you remember what
it
was?
Oh, my God, yeah.
With Nick, what's his name? Was the
Nick
the
Lachey?
Host? Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
oh, wow.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Sean Kingston, Jesus. You know, Boys to Men, Sean.
I know who
whatever.
You're talking about. Yeah.
Those were the three judges.
Yeah, right. I remember that.
Awesome show. Maybe, yeah. I wonder if maybe Ben and Sarah met on...
I think they knew each other at the sing-off. No, they met before the sing-off, but I think that they're part of their friendship, you know, definitely played a part in that.
No, I'm saying they met with you. I know they met before it. Ben Folds and Sarah Bareilles met for the first time when you guys all worked together.
No, they had met before. I met Sarah for the first time through Ben.
So my question is, you're you and you're doing your thing and you're on tour, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, hey, we're doing this album, which, by the way, you did during quarantine, right?
Yeah. Well, most of it. Yeah. We had about three songs recorded.
I have so many questions for you. And I mean, maybe at some point, if you're willing to come back.
We'll do a part two.
But doing that during quarantine, do you have a studio?
No. I mean, I would at times rent like a little vocal booth studio space where I would sing and I would, you know, not unlike our isolation here, where I'm singing to a bunch of orchestra members playing in London and with a producer in Nashville.
Live?
Some of it was live. Some of it we would kind of go back and forth and they'd send a track and then I'd sing and then they'd play again. Or, you know, it was not ideal, but the cool thing about the technology that we have now is that I'm not sure I could have made this album in any other time in my career because we were able to... I'm old school. I love being in the room with everybody and just doing it that way. But through the magic of the internet, we were able to snap our fingers and kind of be together at least in our headphones.
Do you ask for Sarah? Is it somebody else doing this saying, hey, what about doing something with her?
No, I just texted her. I texted her because she's a good friend. And I texted Leslie Odom Jr. too for the other duet. And we went to college together. I like to work with my friends. Like to work with people that I know are gonna, you know, be there with you. And it's not like a label politic, you know, A&R people. And just sometimes collaborations happen that way. But I don't like to kind of rely on, hey, let's get this person's top of the charts. So let's get this executive to talk to this executive. And, you know, that can feel sometimes a little not the warm and fuzzy that you want it to be.
An album versus a podcast, you know, is you versus Aretha Franklin. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you're doing something here and I'm doing this thing.
Thanks a lot.
No, I'm saying you're Aretha to a podcast.
Oh.
If I inverted it, you had to see my hands.
Here's
Josh Groban. Here's Aretha Franklin. Oh, here's the podcast. Here's your album.
Oh.
Like, you're doing a real
thing. I don't
know
about that.
Okay.
We're reaching people in different ways.
Sure.
Well, okay. I hear what you're saying.
But, you know, this is a...
For the sake of argument.
Awesome album I'm listening to in the shower, and here's the thing. I'm embarrassed while I'm editing. So, but there's what has in common is the glasses. What it has in common is, and what I love about this, and podcasts are casual anyway, but mine even more. I mean, mine, I don't have producers. I don't have anybody in the living room. My camera's shut off. Yeah. Everything's out of focus. You're probably lit poorly.
It doesn't sound good.
But it's me, baby.
That's it. It's all you.
And it's just casual. And I've been, I've complained about my podcast a lot of how much work it is and how overwhelming it gets with all. And I'm actually... Sorry, but thankful we didn't do too much animation.
Oh, there's some. That was exciting.
But I've been able to get guests on, like you, and people who I'm a fan of who I've never met, and for whatever reason, because their friend was on it, or they saw something. It just happens, right?
Yeah.
And I love that.
That's
because
great.
Is that what it's like in music? Or because it seems like that's what it's like with Sarah.
Yeah.
But normally when you're making stuff, I mean, hey, I want to do something with this person who I've never met before.
Sure.
But they know who I am, or they worked with, and that is it that what it is?
I think sometimes, you know, it's still people, you know, everybody's you know,
there's so many moving parts when I don't know if there has to be.
I know. There sometimes the moving parts are for a greater creative good, and like I said, making an album, there are a lot of moving parts. It's not just as simple as like I'm gonna walk in, I'm gonna do it. That said, there's a lot of ways people can make albums in their living rooms now, and they're doing quite well. The Billie Eilish documentary with her brother was
I heard.
It's a great documentary. It's incredible because she and Phineas, her extraordinary brother, they're just, you know, they've got these label executives coming into their living room just kind of like doing their label executive head nod to their new songs. And meanwhile, like, mom's making coffee, and they're doing it from the bedroom. And that is an extraordinary thing, and not something that was possible, really, when I first started out. You may find yourself having a lot of moving parts at some point if you want to keep doing this, which you should.
Well, there already are.
Yeah.
But
hold on to the magic of what this is. I think we all have to hold on as anybody, anytime you reach a certain level, there are going to be moving parts whether you want them to be or not, because you rely on people to, you know, keep things moving. And as you expand, it's good to team up with people. It's good to be able to reach out. But you got to remember what brought you there to begin with.
Is it as simple as, hey, Sarah, I'm doing this thing. Yeah, yeah, sure. And then she just comes and does a day of work?
In this case, it was.
There's no, like, yeah. Tons of rehearsal.
Yeah, but the thing is that when you're close to somebody, you know, there have been other times where I've reached out to friends and said, hey, do you want to do this? And they're just like, that's not a good time. You know,
right.
So,
yeah,
and there's no hard feelings. So I think it's good when it can work out that way because you've got that connection and a lot of my collaborations have come through that kind of thing.
Waitress.
Yeah. But back to Waitress.
Back to Waitress.
Yes.
It was an album that I was listening to for years before I saw it.
Really? Oh, yeah. You knew the score.
Yeah.
And then you were there.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've done that. Rent, I did that. All those years ago.
I did it with Phantom of the Opera.
And I did that with Phantom of the Opera, too.
And yes. I was listening to it in the show.
On my way to school.
With Kelly Clarkson, I was listening to it.
Oh, you were listening to my duet.
Yes. No. I was listening to your solo, but I took a shower with Kelly when she and I were listening to you.
And you both were listening to our duet while you both were showering.
Well, the joke I was making was she wasn't singing. I was just showering with her. but I was listening to your duet.
Long story short, you took a shower with Kelly.
Yeah, and we weren't listening. I'm sorry.
But there was no listening going on.
That was my end. I bathed with Kelly Clarkson.
Only cleansing. Sure.
Make sure, by the way, note you could keep this in, to go do a split screen while we both crossed our legs at the same time.
Cleansing. Sure. How basic instinct of us.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, would you do that again? Slow motion?
Do the leg cross?
Yeah. We'll give you a pussy. Give him a pussy.
That's the clip. Yeah.
And then next week we got Josh Groban.
Do you have an awkward leg? Do you have the leg that like feels wrong to cross? Doing that little bit just now, I feel very strange crossing this direction.
Yes. I'm right over left.
Yeah, I'm now left over right.
There are
feels
people
so
when you
wrong.
Do when you clasp your hands, there's a certain thumb that goes over every time.
Yeah,
too.
Right over left for me.
I'm left over right there.
Oh, that's very strange. Oh,
isn't that weird?
Interesting.
Worst first date. Isn't it weird how our thumb like have nothing to say?
I'll have the salad. Yeah.
I had a Kimiko Glenn. Do you know who that is?
Oh yeah, she was great in Waitress.
I didn't know she was in Waitress. I've been listening to this album for years. Then through Instagram, social media,
sure.
My girlfriend actually suggested Kimiko. I look at her stuff, and this is great.
Yeah.
And wasn't until I'm doing research that I realized not only was she in it, she was in the album version. Sarah wasn't in the album version.
That's correct.
Kimiko wasn't. I'm like, I've been listening to your voice for years. That's another example. Like, I'm such a huge fan.
Yeah.
And she sang on the podcast, and it was so fun.
Yeah.
But I saw this in London. I'm there. My girlfriend surprised me. We're going to Waitress. I didn't know until we got there. Sarah Bareilles is doing it.
It's in it. Yeah. And for those that don't know, I imagine everybody. She also composed.
Yes.
She wrote the whole musical. Yeah.
They know.
They know. They know.
I've talked about it every other episode.
Oh, good. Good. Okay.
And now, not to take away from the show, but I always have to give this asterisk. I was stoned. Okay.
Do you often go to shows?
Now I do.
Plays and musicals stoned.
Yeah.
I've never done that. Enhance? Does it?
Let me just say this. It makes the food taste better.
Well, yeah, of course, sure.
In every aspect,
it makes the jokes funnier.
It makes it just. This is such a corny version. I don't mean it as spiritual as that. Maybe I do.
Sure.
It just lets you. It doesn't take anything away,
right?
Except for distraction,
huh?
And it adds. Like, oh my God, yeah, I taste that.
The music.
Yeah, or that was the food analogy, but whenever I hear that, I see that.
Well, I mean, nothing like going to a musical about pies a little stoned.
I'm salivating.
Their pies are turning in the lights the entire show.
I had so many snacks.
Of course you did.
But I'm watching this show, and I say the asterisk because I can't say it's the greatest show ever in the world, because I wasn't. You know, I'm so high, it's hard to...
But you're not looking at it critically or through any kind of lens of...
But maybe it is.
Sure.
Because watching it, there's only one other thing that I can remember feeling, this is... And that's when I saw for the first time Step Brothers in the theater.
Oh,
I was
yeah.
also high. That was the first movie I ever saw high.
I really can't think of two things maybe a Fish concert on New Year's Eve. Stoned for those two experiences would be really great. I think.
Step Brothers?
Step Brothers for sure.
You got to see Waitress High.
Yeah, I will.
It was.
Do we have a? What's your strain of choice if you're going to a musical?
I'll tell you right now. I plug them all the time.
Yeah.
It's just I don't smoke anymore.
Yeah.
Because
I can't.
I take
ever.
Kiva chocolates.
Okay.
Do you know? Do you smoke or do you
no.
like getting high?
I've dabbled in edibles from now and again, like at night. Like if I want to,
I want to give you.
I would
this chocolate.
It's because what would happen is like if I wanted to de-stress, I was like a whiskey guy, or I was like I'd have a cocktail
Very
or something
cool.
at the end of the night. But yeah, that was my swirling of the glass. Yeah, a little mimery going on here. And I found that just didn't like the way booze was making me feel. It was kind of making me more depressed, and it was bad on my throat. I was waking up feeling dehydrated. And so, you know, once it became legal in California, a little edible at night. But I every so often, I don't do it a lot, but I like a good like indica or indica hybrid because...
Kiva's a hybrid.
Great.
Yeah, you relax. But you don't get paranoid.
What is that pollen? That's the. It's. I'm crying. I'm crying over the.
All right. Well, let's.
Over the chocolate.
Oh God. I really would love to do. I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah.
But I would love while you're here, and I'm like, I like to think of myself. I'm a rich kid. I'm the son of a rich guy, and like all my dad's friends are trying to please me and let me play along with the pros.
Okay.
Could we do a performance?
A performance.
Yeah.
Are you speaking musically or?
Yeah. Will you sing something and I'll play?
Oh, sure.
Also, and I don't know if this is going to work technically because I've struggled with this recorder.
Okay.
I want to call my mom and tell her I'm about to do a song with you.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So I don't know A, if we'll be able to hear.
Where's your mom?
Cleveland.
Oh, she's in Cleveland. Okay.
Her arms are tired, blah, blah, blah. So I'll see if this works. And if so, I'm not sure if she'll be able to hear you.
Okay. I've only had coffee out here. I've had not had any water or anything.
Oh,
so
I'm so sorry. I forgot. I only have sparkling water.
That's okay. You might get a burp.
All right. I'm actually going to...
But that would just stick the landing of our story.
I ran out of water. I'm actually going to Postmates. I'm going to get some water because I need some anyway. Hopefully it comes soon.
Oh.
But I'll give you the sparkling now if not.
Okay, sure. That sounds good. Thank you. The bubbles are light. They're nice. They're a subtle. It's a subtle bubble.
That's part of the Tyso brand.
I like that.
When she answers,
what's your mom's name?
Debbie. I don't know.
The shoes were on backwards. Hello.
Hey, Debbie.
Yes.
Hi, it's Josh Groban. I'm here with your wonderful son here. How random is that?
I can't believe it.
Wait a minute.
I'm actually talking to Josh. I'm gonna cry.
We've been crying for the last 90 minutes. It's very, very nice to meet you. Not only that, I think Rick and I are about to embark on a little bit of a musical
Wait,
journey
it's
together.
It's very hard to hear.
Yeah,
so
Mom,
very...
that's I have a bad setup here. But Josh said that he'll sing a song with me,
yeah.
And I wanted to tell you.
Okay, Ricky. I'm having a hard time breathing.
Oh no.
I'm such a groupie.
Thank you, Debbie.
Mom, tell Josh, I mean, I hate to be so morbid, but it's kind of on theme. Tell Josh about Grandpa's funeral.
Well, I wanted to sing that your song. I wanted to sing that song for my father.
You raised me up.
So you sing, Debbie?
Because that's my song to my dad.
Yeah.
But I couldn't because I could barely speak. I was crying so much. Plus, the microphones weren't working at the temple. But that's my song to my dad.
Oh, that's very, very sweet. Well, I'm very, very sorry for your loss. And I
thank you. It's been 15 years, but...
Also, Mom, I never met Josh. He comes over, I put him out on a balcony, and I say, call my mom, I want to talk about when her dad died. I mean, could I be worse of a host?
We're so Jewish.
I don't think you would have needed a microphone anyway. I feel like you've got a voice that
Mom,
projects.
Sing it for him.
No, you know, I can't believe you're sitting in my son's house, and I'm sitting in my house in Cleveland talking to you. You are so talented.
Thank you, Debbie.
You're one of my favorite performers. You are so talented.
Well, you must be very proud of Rick as well. He's very talented.
Yeah. Oh no,
Mom, I'm going to let you go because of time, and also I don't know. You know, I'm forcing somebody to talk to a mom over a connection that doesn't work well.
It made my day, though, Debbie.
Let me just tell you, this is giving me nachas, okay?
I'm verklempt just speaking about it. Thank you.
I'll call you later, Mom, about
darling.
I forced him to do too many takes. All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye, Debbie. Love you.
That was nice. Thanks. And wow. If it doesn't go without saying, I did that because I know how much she likes you.
That was mashugana.
Forcing it now. Dad wasn't Jewish. I just realized you were faking
it. That was mashugana. She's very, very, that's very nice. Very nice.
Thank you.
Wow.
For that. That was
very
fun.
Sweet.
And it's cool. And I'm putting you on the spot with so many things, but I got to get my piano.
Oh yeah.
Would you?
Yeah.
So I kind of want to recreate like it's a show. Can I give you something to put on?
If it helps with the ambiance of what we're trying to achieve here, sure.
Look to camera and snap.
Okay. Yep.
Oh wow. Okay. This actually fits very well, Rick.
Actually, I thought it would be funny because I thought it would not fit you.
No, it's
fits well.
Like a glove.
Jim Carrey.
What?
Like a glove is Jim Carrey.
Oh, that is Jim Carrey.
Five,
yes.
Six, seven, eight.
It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside. I'm not one of those who can easily hide. I don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy a big house where we both could live. If I was a sculptor, oh, but then again, no. Or a man who makes potions in a traveling show. I know it's not much, but it's the best I can do. My gift is my song, yeah, and this one's for you. You could tell everybody this is your song. It may be quite simple.
You can tell
simple.
Everybody part. You're coming in too late.
Am I coming in too late?
You can tell everybody
this is your song.
So right after this one's for you. Boom. And you can tell.
Got it.
Well,
okay.
Take it from this one's for you. Tell them that.
Okay. They want to take it from this one's for you?
Three, five, four. Two.
This one's for you. You can tell. Sorry, can we do it one more time? Yeah. Sorry. This one's for you.
Give me a 5-4-3.
5-4-3. This one's for you. You could tell every.
And you can tell.
Nope.
Sorry. This one's for you.
This one's for you.
And you
could tell everybody.
I'm doing one more.
You
ready?
Okay. That's a weird spot, right?
What?
7.
Am I wrong?
3. I don't think so. I'll follow you. This one's for you. And you could tell everybody this is your song. It may be quite simple, but
okay, 5-3.
This one's for you. And you could tell everybody this is your song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in words how wonderful life is while you're in the world. I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in words how wonderful life is while you're in the world. While you're in the world. Oh, there's those allergies again.
Do you guys, Josh, do you, and do the strings know Titanic?
Do we know Titanic?
I'd have to look it up. That's a woman's key. It's a very low.
Every night in my dream.
Do we need a different key? I don't know if
No, let's do it down here. It'll be very Johnny Cash sings Titanic. That's him. Give it that whole intro. Oh.
Every night in my dreams, I see you, I feel you. That is how I know you. Go on.
Oh, wow, Rick.
Far across the distance and spaces between us, you have come to show you. Go on. Near, far, wherever you are, I believe that the heart does go on. Once more, you open the door, and you're here in my heart, and my heart will go on and on.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about how there was absolutely enough room. Oh, key change.
Far, wherever you are, I believe that the heart does go on. Once more, you open the door, and you're here in my heart, and my heart will go on and on.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I don't. Sorry, I don't know. Are they laughing at me?
What is that doing? What is that? Is that a monologue? Was there a monologue? Oh, is it the end?
No, I was just ending it.
What is it?
I was ending it. I don't know the song enough.
I don't know the song enough either. I mean, that part's famous. I just winged it, but I love ending on a random key change. That was beautiful, Rick. Thank you for throwing that at me. Thank you. I want to thank Genius.com. If you want the lyrics to My Heart Will Go On, you can go to Genius.com/My Heart Will Go On at the link below. And
let's end it. We got to go. Ladies and gentlemen, one more song. No, I'm just kidding. Josh Groban, I'm sweating. Thank you.
All my life.
Scoot doo. Blabbity blue.